Ever been deep in the law books, maybe late at night, trying to make sense of how a seemingly simple business rule can suddenly, clash head on with something as huge as the First Amendment?
Oh, yeah. Like a regulation about signs turning into a major constitutional question?
Exactly. That's precisely the kind of legal tangle we're getting into today.
We're doing a deep dive into a case called Retail Digital Network, LLC v. Applesmith. Basically, it's where California's power to regulate booze runs smack into commercial free speech.
Right, so for all you law students listening, why is this case worth your time? Well, it's a fantastic real-world example of just how nuanced commercial speech doctrine can be.
And it shows the real power of existing circuit court decisions precedent, plus the very unique legal world surrounding alcohol.
And don't forget standing. It's a super clear illustration of what it takes to even get a court to hear your First Amendment claim in the first place.
Absolutely. So our mission today, if you will, is to really unpack the central conflict in RDN v. Applesmith, get inside the court's reasoning, and see what the bigger picture implications are for commercial speech law generally.
Okay, let's get started. So, who is RDN? What's their business? And what exactly were they trying to do that led to this lawsuit?
So RDN, Retail Digital Network, operates these digital advertising displays, screens, inside retail stores, stores that sell alcohol.
Okay, like digital billboards inside a liquor store or supermarket.
Pretty much. And their business model is straightforward. They contract with advertisers who want to put ads on those screens. And that includes, importantly, alcohol manufacturers and wholesalers.
Makes sense. So where did things go wrong for RDN?
Well, they tried to get advertising contracts with the alcohol producers and distributors. But these companies refused.
Refused. Why?
They were worried about breaking California law, specifically sections of the California Business and Professions Code, 25503, subsections F, G, and H.
Okay, section 25503 F through H. Let's break that down. What do those specific rules actually forbid? What had these companies so concerned?
Well, they do a few things. Subsections F through H essentially stop alcohol manufacturers and wholesalers from paying retailers to advertise their distilled spirits.
Paying for ads specifically?
Right. They also restrict them from giving retailers decorations or signs unless it's just advertising the suppliers on products. And the really big one here, they flat out ban suppliers from paying for the placement of any alcohol advertising inside a store that sells alcohol.
Wow. Okay. So connect the dots for us. How did these rules aimed at the alcohol suppliers end up hurting RDN's business directly?
It basically cut the legs out from under their plan to get revenue from alcohol ads. The manufacturers and wholesalers, fearing they'd violate the law, wouldn't sign advertising deals with RDN.
So no alcohol ad money for RDN screens.
Exactly. And that direct loss of potential income, that's the concrete economic injury. That's what gave RDN the legal standing to file the lawsuit.
Standing, right. That first hurdle you have to clear just to get your case heard. So RDN could sue because they showed actual financial harm.
precisely. They demonstrated, a real economic loss, lost ad revenue, and they could directly link that loss to the manufacturers refusing to contract, which was in turn directly linked to this challenged California law. That causal connection is key for standing.
Okay, standing established. RDN's in court. Now, the main event. The First Amendment. What was their argument? Why did they say these California rules violated free speech?
Their core claim was that California's rules restricting payments for advertising violated their First Amendment rights, and maybe the suppliers' rights too, the right to engage in commercial speech.
How is paying for an ad considered speech itself?
Well, the act of paying for advertising is seen as expressive conduct. It's an action, paying money, that facilitates speech promoting a product.
Interesting. And the law targeted this based on.
It targeted speech based on two things: the content ads about alcohol and the speaker alcohol suppliers making the payments.
Okay, so it wasn't like a general rule about all advertising signs.
No, exactly. That's a crucial difference. This wasn't a content-neutral rule, like, say, a city ordinance limiting the size of all signs in a certain zone, regardless of what they advertised or who paid. This specifically targeted alcohol ads paid for by suppliers.
Got it. So, California is restricting this specific type of commercial speech. What was their defense? Why did the state think these restrictions were necessary and constitutional?
California's main justification was preventing something called tied house arrangements.
Tied house. That sounds old. What does that mean?
It is pretty old. Tied house laws go way back, mainly to the era right after Prohibition was repealed. The basic idea was to keep the interests of alcohol suppliers, the makers and distributors, separate from the interests of the retailers who sell to the public.
Separate why? What were they trying to prevent?
Historically, the goals were things like preventing monopolies, stopping corruption between suppliers and retailers, and promoting temperance, avoiding overly aggressive sales tactics that might encourage excessive drinking.
Ah, so like preventing a big brewery from effectively controlling a bunch of bars because the bars owe them money or rely on them for perks.
Exactly that kind of thing. The laws aim to keep retailers independent so they wouldn't be pressured by suppliers.
So the state argued that by stopping suppliers from paying for ads inside stores, they were directly supporting this goal, preventing suppliers from using ad money to gain influence over retailers.
Precisely. Their logic was, if suppliers can pay for prime ad placement inside a store, they gain leverage. Leverage over which brands the retailer pushes, how products are displayed, essentially undermining the retailer's independence. And that could lead back to the problems the Tide House laws were meant to solve.
Okay, so we have RDN's commercial speech rights versus the state's interests in preventing these Tide House arrangements. A classic constitutional balancing act. How did the court actually weigh this? I assume the Central Hudson test came into play.
You assume correctly. Central Hudson is the go-to framework for commercial speech restrictions. The court ran the California law through its four parts.
Okay, walk us through it. Prong one.
First, does the speech concern lawful activity, and is it not misleading? Yes. Selling alcohol is legal, and the proposed ads weren't claimed to be deceptive. So far, so good for RDN.
Prong two. Is the government's interest substantial?
Yes, again. The court agreed with California that preventing Tide House arrangements is a substantial state interest. So the state clears prong two.
All right, prong three is the big one, usually. Does the regulation directly advance that substantial interest?
This is where the court sided with the state. It reasoned that banning these payments does directly advance the goal of preventing supplier influence. If suppliers can't pay for ads, they have one less tool to potentially control retailers.
Okay. And the final prong, number four, is the restriction no more extensive than necessary, the narrow tailoring part?
Right. And here, too, the court found the law passed muster. It concluded the ban on payments wasn't, you know, overkill. They didn't see other less speech-restrictive ways, like maybe just requiring disclosure for payments that would be just as effective at preventing that supplier control.
So applying Central Hudson, the court found the California law constitutional. But wait, I thought there were newer Supreme Court cases, like Searle v. IMS Health, that maybe suggested stricter review for rules targeting specific commercial speech content. How did that fit in?
Yes. This is where it gets interesting and where court hierarchy really matters. You're right, Searle, and even earlier cases like 44 Liquor Mart certainly hinted that the Supreme Court might be leaning towards tougher scrutiny for content-based commercial speech rules. Maybe something closer to strict scrutiny, not just Central Hudson's intermediate level.
So did RDN argue Searle changed the game and made the California law invalid?
It definitely did. But the district court here pointed to something crucial. Binding circuit precedent.
Meaning
a previous decision by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the circuit California is in, was directly on point. A case called Act Media.
And Act Media had said.
Act Media had upheld similar California restrictions on alcohol advertising payments years before. And under the way our court system works, a district court within the Ninth Circuit has to follow Ninth Circuit precedent. Like Act Media.
Even if newer Supreme Court cases like Searle seem to point in a different direction.
Yes, unless the Supreme Court explicitly overrules that specific circuit precedent, or unless the old precedent is clearly irreconcilable with the newer Supreme Court rulings.
And the court here didn't think Act Media was clearly irreconcilable with Searle.
Apparently not. The court drew a distinction. It noted the California law in RDN wasn't a total ban on alcohol ads. Ads were okay if suppliers didn't pay for them. They felt this was different enough from the situation in Searle, which involved arguably a more sweeping restriction on the use of information for marketing. So Act Media remained the controlling law for that court.
Wow. So for law students, that's a huge practical point. Lower courts are bound by their circuit's decisions, even if the legal winds from the Supreme Court seem to be shifting. Precedent is powerful.
Incredibly powerful. It really highlights how legal doctrine often changes incrementally. And circuit precedent acts as a very strong anchor until definitively overturned.
Okay, bringing it all together then. For the future lawyers listening, what are the big takeaways from this specific fight over digital booze ads in California?
Well, first, it reinforces that Central Hudson and its intermediate scrutiny are still generally the standard for commercial speech. It's protected, yes, but not usually at the highest level like political speech.
And it shows the ongoing debate, right?
Exactly. It really highlights the tension, the sort of pushing and pulling in First Amendment law, especially where commercial speech meets industries with unique regulatory histories, like alcohol.
What about practical lessons for practicing law?
I'd say three key things. One, standing is real. You absolutely need to show direct, concrete harm to get your foot in the courthouse door on a First Amendment claim. Two, understand the difference between content-based and content-neutral regulations. It dictates the whole analysis.
And three,
know your circuit's precedent. It can often be the deciding factor, even when broader legal trends seem to be moving.
Okay, so let's quickly recap this deep dive. We looked at RDN v. Applesmith, seeing the clash between RDN's commercial speech rights for its ad network and California's long-standing Tidehouse regulations for alcohol.
Right. We saw the Central Hudson test in action and how the state's interest in preventing a supplier dominance over retailers was found to be substantial and directly advanced by the payment ban.
And critically, we saw how the existing Ninth Circuit precedent in ACT Media controlled the outcome, despite arguments about newer Supreme Court cases like Sorrell.
A perfect summary. Mm-hmm. Which leads us to maybe a final thought to chew on.
Go for it.
Given this evolving landscape for commercial speech, and alcohol's always unique status, how might future cases keep refining this balance? Think about new digital advertising models, things beyond just in-store screens. Could they pose fresh challenges to these old Tidehouse rules?
That's a great question. How do century-old doctrines adapt to 21st century marketing? Definitely something worth watching.